This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, we're live. It's Friday, October 25th, 2019. In exactly 1 week at this time, I will be naked at the Desire Resort in Cancun with the folks from the swing set. I am literally counting the days. I cannot wait until I get there. If you want to know what the heck I'm talking about, you can go to swingsetdesire.com. I believe it's like sold out except for like one spot, but you can start planning for next year. You know what I mean? I also want to shout out my friends at HBO. I went to a great party last night, which was a celebration of the launch of their newest show on HBO. It's called Mrs. Fletcher. It's based on the book. It's a sexual coming-of-age story, but for a woman who's in midlife. And yesterday, I went and someone from the staff of GLAAD interviewed one of its stars, Jen Richards, who I love. And they gave out lots of cool sex toys. They did this little pop-up shop. And their promotion so far has been really sex positive. So check that out. And this is not a paid endorsement. Okay, guys, because you know I love to be transparent. I don't usually have a guest on, like a repeat guest on, so soon. But this person's writing makes it impossible for me to not have them on my show. Let me tell you who they are. Fancy Feast is a burlesque performer who has been working professionally in the industry since 2011. She holds the title of Miss Coney Island 2016 and is the recipient of the Revolutionary Award at the 2017 New York Burlesque Festival. She's the co-producer of the monthly performance art spectacle, The Fuck You Review, which has been featured in Time Out New York and on BBC Radio. She has performed nationwide at venues including the Whitney, the Brooklyn Museum, and the Burlesque Hall of Fame in Las Vegas. She's the subject of the 2016 Fancy Feast, The Fat Burlesque Performer by Leon Chase. The Huffington Post says, quote, there's plenty to unpack in Fancy's hypnotic performances, which employ humor and arousal to help audiences shed their preconceptions as she peels off each layer of clothing. Countering the assumption that nudity is something authentic and true, while makeup is bound up with the fabricated and pretend, Fancy reveals how our masks are just as authentic as our flesh. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Fancy Feast.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me.
So you wrote this piece that we're going to talk about, and I saw it and I read it and I was like, oh my God, I texted Raymond immediately. I was like, oh my God, get her on the show now. I can explain a little more, but I want you to open the piece, which appeared in Jewish Currents recently. Just give us a little taste of it so we know what we're in for.
Sure. So it's called On Being a Fetish. What would your Jewish lawyer dad think if he knew what I was doing to you right now? Ben asked as we sat tangled in the front seat of his suburban assault vehicle, negotiating the car center console. I was 19 and making the most of my trip home the summer after freshman year, which in the days before Tinder meant a Craigslist date. I don't know, I responded. This kind of thing really isn't his business, don't you think? A jolt of exasperation flashed between us. I had given the wrong answer. He tried again. But aren't you his only daughter? And you're getting fingered by a Christian boy you met on the internet. I sighed, pressing my knees closer together. I don't want to talk about my father right now. He nodded in muddled recognition, and we continued silent. I knew what he had wanted me to say. My Abba doesn't know that I'm out with you right now. He would have never given me permission. Should I keep going?
No, that's good. That's good. Okay, so in this piece, you tease out this very thorny topics of desire and power dynamics, oppression, projection, and taboos as you kind of talk about what it's been like for you to be fetishized as a Jewish woman. And the reason that this like caught my eye so intensely is because I have been called, and I don't self-identify, but a Jewophile, which is that people have noticed that a lot of my friends and a lot of my lovers are Jewish. I grew up in New York, so you might say, well, yeah, I mean, if you grew up on Long Island, you just met only Jewish people. But I actually grew up in an all-white Christian town with no Jewish people. Very strange. But this is something about me. And I was like, oh, I wonder if it's a fetish. I wonder if I'm fetishizing them or if I just love Jewish people. I can't even believe I'm like admitting this on the air, but I am. I mean, if you go back through my history, it's like, oh, she kind of has a type. Oh. So we have to dig into this. I want to also read another piece of yours from this piece. Mm-hmm. Quote, sex offers an arena in which to experiment with roles that excite us, providing a release valve that can lessen the pressure of our roles in everyday life. In my years in organized kink communities, I watched people finally relax as ropes tightened around their bodies, laughing as they were lashed to a beam. It feels elementary to me. We live in a violent and disempowering world. Making space to give and take power consensually is taking the lemons life gives us and making lemonade. It's not surprising that we like things that are fucked up, maybe even because they are fucked up. That's not a bad thing. It just is. So I think this has been an argument that's been raised before for why people love to wrestle with taboos in BDSM scenes, or I would argue some of these people aren't kinky, don't identify as BDSM, but they're wrestling with this in their sex life, in their erotic life. You know, the notion that like this shit is all around us. Of course, we can't ignore it. We want to work it out. We want to get dirty. We want to rewrite the script. And sometimes we actually want to have more agency than we do in the real world. Do you agree?
I think that can absolutely be the case. But I think the part that really gets me is the idea that we should act without somehow thinking about it or wrestling with the difficulty of it. And that's the piece that gets thorny for me.
I mean, it's sort of like, how do you judge someone's, you know, thoughtfulness in playing with these taboos?
Mm. At least in the piece, like speaking about Judaism, my issue is that no one who ever wanted me to be a fetish object for them was able to speak about it with me first.
Interesting.
It would just kind of be dropped in my lap. And so then I had to really act on the fly and figure out if I was consenting to this thing that just happened. But there was no sort of pre-negotiation and no sort of conscious conversation around it.
So it really, quite frankly, came up first in dirty talk for you.
Yeah. Yes.
like the dirty talk you gave us an example of in the open.
Yes. Yes. Whatever you call that. Yes.
Whatever you call that. Okay. So that's a little surprising, a little shocking. I mean, I would have thought if there's going to be role play, and role play doesn't just mean role play with identities that are different than ours, right? Role play can also be kind of exaggerated versions of us.
Exactly. And so if I'm, you know, playing a Jewish American princess at summer camp, I would like to know about it.
Consent first.
Yep.
Right. It's so interesting and strange because it has this quality of also of people not speaking about race.
Yeah.
Right. But then often getting into the bedroom, especially white people do this with people of color, and then they start to sort of things start to spill out of their mouth, and the person's like, whoa, 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 whoa. We didn't negotiate this.
Absolutely. And I think for me, part of it is that, you know, creation of fetishes, I know that there's like a lot of discussion of how did it come to be? Like, is it in the first few years of development? Like, did you just see something? But with identities like races and cultures, since they're social constructs, they're taught and learned. So I feel like the fetishes may develop later because it's like through social learning that we figure out this kind of stuff. So I would hope that it exists in a more sort of a conscious and aware state of being when you're going to negotiate it.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take our first break. We're going to hear from our sponsors, including the amazing Pleasure Chest. I'm going to tell you guys what's coming up at Pleasure Chest. They've got a lot of events this the end of October, beginning of November. New York City, October 30th, Tricks and Treats Halloween Happy Hour. November 4th, Threesomes, Feasting for the Holidays. You get that theme there. With Tina Horn. Chicago, November 3rd, Sex Work 101. November 6th in Chicago, a live recording and a Q&A with Jen Gunter, who is the author of The Vagina Bible. And in LA, October 30th, Tricks and Treats Hollywood Happy Hour. And November 6th, Butt Sex Basics. You can go to pleasurechest.com, click on events, and see more about all of these. Let's take a break. And when we come back, more about being fetishized as a Jewish woman with Fancy Feast. Hey everyone, it's Kinktober. As the days get shorter and the nights get longer, our friends at the Pleasure Chest will be turning a kinky corner and diving deeper into cosplay, bondage, and a bit more BDSM. They'll be featuring some of their favorite kink folks and products on their site and social media all month long. From pup hoods and pony plugs to sexy costumes and size-inclusive lingerie, the Pleasure Chest has everything you need to kick up your kink or cosplay. Check out their selection of Halloween costumes and accessories before shopping anywhere else. All stores will have candy out and hidden coupons around the store with delicious discounts from October 30th to the 31st. You can also visit pleasurechest.com to see the schedule of their free weekly workshops and save 20% off their most popular kink, cosplay, and BDSM gear from October 25th to the 31st, online only. While you're there, if you make a purchase, use coupon code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book though. It is way outside my comfort zone and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me and my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Fancy Feast about her recent article on being a fetish, about being fetishized for being Jewish. And before the break, we talked about this notion of like thoughtfulness or sort of consciousness. Are we going to play with these identities versus am I going to sort of spring it on you in the bedroom and you feeling like, wait, I don't think I consented to, well, definitely having my Jewish father in the scene, for example.
Yeah,
which like might be a boner killer. I mean, I don't know. Like, it totally depends. And I, that made me think that, like, I have always talked to people. Like, I've always told people that lots of my lovers have been Jewish. Mm. I feel like a lot of people in my life that I love are Jewish. People have said to me, well, you're from New York, so you're sort of, like, Jewish adjacent. Mm. But also very clear that I walk in the world and I'm read as a WASP. Which is what I am, mm-hmm. with a little bit of Italian thrown in. It's a very complicated genealogy. I know my last name is Italian, makes it sound like I'm really Italian, but for another day. But if someone said that to you, would you immediately sort of have your guard up?
Yeah, it does. If somebody's just going to throw that into the conversation, like as they're hitting on me, if that's like a piece of what gets introduced, I'm just going to kind of raise my antenna a little bit. Cause there's the idea around fetishes. I think I write about this a little bit, the idea of like, it's just a preference. I just have a preference, mm-hmm. as if the existence of a preference negates interrogating it. And when somebody slides that in as like, well, this person's going to love this if I, you know, start off the bat by like identifying their cultural background or their racial background as being specifically something I'm into, they're going to be comfortable and love it and not feel othered. And I haven't found that to be my experience.
Mm-hmm. Really, really interesting. There's this other part in the piece. I'm going to read another part. I'm basically going to read you people the whole article. No, I'm not. And so you should go read the article, and we have the link on our Twitter. So this is a quote. There's something blunt desire offers that viewing me in the full complexity of my humanity doesn't. It's the difference between someone going to bed with you because you're smart and kind and someone going to bed with you because they're hungry for you. I'm not interested in fucking people whose attraction to me solely lives in their executive brain. I want the guts and the meat and the sweat of it. And sometimes that's partnered with a kind of objectification. So you've really articulated something here that I feel like I've known for a long time, but no one's ever said. This makes so much sense to me, which is that like sometimes we're attracted to the things we're attracted to and we can't necessarily like make sense of them, right?
Right. I'm hearing Nine Inch Nails in my head. Like, it's I want to fuck you like an animal, not I want to fuck you like an entire individual with wants and needs and interests. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this reminds me also about talking about feminist porn a lot, which is I was on a panel a while ago for the feminist porn book, and there were like 7 of the authors who were in the book who ranged from sex workers and porn performers to academics. And we had been doing readings and events like for just weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And someone asked a question from the audience that we'd never been asked before. And that was, hey, what do you guys jerk off to?
Whoa.
It was very personal. And we were like, is this going to be on Twitter? And everyone's like eyes bugged out of their head, including mine. Mm-hmm. And so we decided that if people are not going to like live tweet this, we're going to go one by one and share this really personal thing. And no one... I think you know where the story is going. No one said that they get turned on by feminist porn.
Mm.
Right. And in fact, some of the people got turned on by some pretty, I'm just going to say, intense dynamics. Right. Uh-huh. Just intense dynamics, that's what I'm going to say. And not politically correct dynamics. And, you know, so it raised this whole question of if feminist porn in one area is trying to sort of like humanize the sex worker performers, bring them to life by letting them speak for themselves, treating them as three-dimensional people. What if people are like, I actually don't want to know that much because then I am invested in your personhood and maybe that's not going to be my turn on?
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's so complicated because I feel like that's, also a question of representation. And I feel like a lot of feminist porn exists to fill in gaps of what historically has not been created. I can't believe I'm saying this to you. I mean, you know better than I do.
No, say it.
So that it's really meant to provide like an alternative or a counterpoint to sort of what the dominant mainstream conversation has been about porn. But then you're kind of like, I want the nasty stuff too.
Right. Exactly. I want the nasty stuff. And people actually do, I think, struggle with this. I've heard this from people where they're like, the porn I like is not cool and it is not okay. And if things that happened in that porn happened in real life, I would stop it. So how do I get turned on by this and masturbate and maybe have an orgasm when it's not in line with like who I am when I walk in the world?
Right. Ugh. I mean, for me, the difference would probably be in the way that it's being produced. That it's like, if I'm watching something really fucked up and everybody, I know behind the scenes, people did, you know, consent to it and got paid for it. Maybe that's like making it more okay for myself. I don't know if that's just like a capitalist response to this problem.
No, I don't think so. I think it's partly a feminist response too, because I think part of what many people who identify as feminists struggle with is this sort of tape in their head, which we've certainly been fed by anti-porn feminist, which is as you're watching, you're thinking, oh my God, was this person treated with respect? Did they know what they were getting into? Uh-huh. Did someone surprise them with something or go past their boundaries and they couldn't stop, right? That tape, when that tape starts in your head, it's pretty much over for a sexy time experience.
Yeah, not hot.
And so I like the idea too. And I feel like I explored this in my series, Rough Sex, which is like, if we put the consent up front and people talked about crafting the scene, can we then follow them into it wherever it goes, even if it goes to places that may be dark or scary or taboo?
Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with that work of yours.
But there's also this question in that clip, that little piece I read, of like, how do we reconcile people objectifying us? You know, I think we talk about objectification a lot when we talk about porn, maybe even too much. But, what if it feels good? What if it feels bad? I have a very adverse reaction to being told what my experience is, who I am, or what my motivations are. When people do that to me in most contexts, I get really mad. It triggers me. It's like, it's my least favorite thing. So everyone just take note of that. Okay. But in the context of sex, like someone saying to me something like, oh, you know, you want it, or I know you want it. That would probably be hot.
Yeah, that sounds hot.
Okay. But like, how do we reconcile that?
I think part of what the reason why I wrote this piece is because I haven't seen the both existing around this issue. And it's a lot muckier to try to wade through it because there are some things that I haven't been able to reconcile for myself about this. And rather than necessarily needing to have a conclusion, I need to just have both pieces coexist somehow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And acknowledge that they're both there.
Yes. Yes.
Which sometimes is hard. And I think especially around sexuality, people often want sort of black and white answers. Is this right or is this wrong? Is this normal or is it abnormal? Right?
Ugh, as if that was, I mean, and I feel like all sex educators were like, well, it depends. You know, that's always the, right. That's always the response.
Exactly. It's just like, what's the right vibrator for me? It's like the one that makes you feel great, but there is no single right vibrator or best vibrator.
Oh, I feel like I disappointed thousands of people with that exact response.
Because they want you to just tell them, well, I mean, in some cases around sex education, I think they want you to give them the sort of magic key, right?
Yes. And I only did that around Valentine's Day when there were too many people in the store.
Because you also have worked at a sex shop. I just want to tell people that. And we had a great conversation about your job at the sex shop, which was also prompted by a piece you wrote. Mm-hmm. So if people want to go back and in the catalog, search Fancy Feast, both of these episodes will come up. So you should listen to that because, oh, she's got stories. And they're not, and they're stories told in really thoughtful ways that are not the typical, oh my God, a guy came in and he was super macho, but he bought a butt plug. Shocking. They're not like that. Her stories are much deeper, which is why I just fucking love your writing. Like I can't tell you, I read writing about sexuality every day, all the time. It's sort of my job, right? And you write about it in such a complicated but also somehow satisfying way.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
It's just, you get to the heart of the matter and you unpack it in a way that other people, I guess, sort of gloss over. That's what I feel about this article. It's like people would be like, oh, yeah, whatever. And you're like, no. Hold the phone. We should probably talk about this.
I think that comes from all of the long shifts when nobody was coming in and I was staring out the window. This is the kind of stuff that I was thinking about on the sex shop floor. So I'm so grateful that it can find purchase now that I'm a couple years out of that work.
Yeah, of course. And I think you're totally on the money when it comes to sometimes these things can't be fully reconciled, right? That we've got to just notice them and think about them.
Yeah, how could they be solved? I mean, it all exists sort of in conversation with our society, which makes really different meaning out of different identities and power and gender and class and all of this kind of stuff. And it's all there in sexual interactions that we have. So there's no fixing it and there's no solving it. There's just sort of reconciling it for ourselves and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to take another break. Coming up, we're going to talk about power and oppression and all, and even hate, which by the way, is not the opposite of love. Or lust. So there's a lot more to talk about. Stay with us and we'll be back. Lately, it seems like everyone is talking about self-care. Well, taking care of your body and mind is important. For me, maintaining a sexual relationship with myself is part of my self-care routine. I love mixing it up, and I like a little inspiration on that front. Sometimes holding the phone to watch something just doesn't work for me. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories to inspire and arouse. This isn't like an audiobook. It's more like hearing someone tell you the details of an escapade or listening in on an actual sex scene. It's pretty immersive that way. It's like having someone right in your earbuds. The stories are high quality, they're well produced, and they're all original. I like it because you can select from different categories. Hello, BDSM. And you can get a flavor of each one from the descriptions. You can choose men with women, women with women, and they're growing their men with men selections. Start one, then jump to another if that one's not for you. The majority are about 10 minutes long. And for you, my listeners, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's right. Get your first 30 days free when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. Then call me and tell me what your favorites are.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Like attraction that digs into identity, kink can hurt like a deep tissue massage or can harm like a chemical burn. And thoughtful perverts know the difference. We're better talking about that difference when the kink is related to physical hurt or harm like the difference between being spanked red-bottomed versus sustaining nerve damage. We are less able to tease out this distinction when our kinks are based in social identity, which is the difference between playing out an edgy scenario responsibly and replicating oppression.
That was Fancy Feast, my guest for today, reading a piece from this great article that you have to read called On Being a Fetish. It's in Jewish Currents, which is going to get some sort of strange traffic soon, I think. And they're going to be like, what's this? Who are these people who aren't usually readers? Okay, so this is a really great point, which is that, and I think in general, in kink, people are very focused on the physical. How do we do this safely? What's the harm reduction? What's the technique? What's the skill? You know, the sort of flogging 101 class. It never goes out of style. People always want to learn that. But we don't always have these conversations like at kink events or even in like kink educational books about the psychological stuff, right? And this piece that you read makes me think of things like race play, doing like a 50s housewife scene, some kind of humiliation. Like I know queer people who've done scenes where they are bullied or even bashed for being queer, for being read as queer, and they're sort of punished for that. I mean, this also encompasses rape fantasies, right? So how do we begin to tell the difference between what's called edge play in kink and just replicating the oppression?
I wish I had a pat answer for you.
I know you do. I know you do.
Yeah, just follow these three steps. No, I think people who are not ready to sit down in a neutral space and sort of exhaustively discuss what is and isn't going to happen in a scene. If they're not ready for that, or if they feel like that's somehow going to, you know, ruin the mystery or make it less exciting to do the thing, I don't think they're ready to do it. I think it makes so much sense. Like, I don't want to see a play where there's no rehearsal, right? So if you're going to do edge play, please do some edge rehearsal.
But you say, though, playing out an edgy scenario responsibly. So what else do you think would make it responsible besides a kind of rehearsal or conversation or conversations?
Well, okay, so stuff like not being wasted when it's happening.
Oh, God. Okay. I was taking that for granted. Thank you for that. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And having time to do whatever kind of aftercare. And not just like immediately after the scene, but like in the week after, the weeks after, whatever kind of additional unpacking, I feel like you need to sign on for whatever comes up. And then this didn't make it into the piece because it's a half-baked idea, but I was wondering about the idea of like sexual carbon credits. That it's
Okay, tell me more. Tell me more, sister. This is okay. Go.
Okay, so my thought is like, I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march to protest like immigration stuff that's going on in our country, for example. So it's like, if you're going to do this, like if you're going to enjoy the fun and fucked up stuff about having an identity and living in this society, you need to also be doing the work to make our society more just.
Okay, now this is really good shit. I mean, this makes me think of actually like Robin Henderson Espinosa's work. They just had a book come out called Activist Theology, and they're a theologian, and they talk about a kind of ethics of care within community. And that's what this makes me think of, which is, if we're going to play out all this stuff, we also have to care and stand up for the people we're doing it with.
Yes. Yes.
I love this carbon point thing. I love that idea. I love a half-baked idea. What other half-baked ideas did not make it into this article?
My goodness. I mean, I was lucky to have such amazing editors here. I was writing about other scenarios where it's not exactly as explicit as the first situation that is in the article, but the sort of Jewish microaggressive sexual comments that
come, okay, what are those?
So it's like, oh, well, you know, it's not that I have a thing for Jews. It's that all Jews are smart and I really like smart women.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, oh, it's not that I'm into Jewish people. It's that I really like, you know, curly hair and big breasts. And that's what being Jewish is.
Mm.
It's these ideas that kind of skirt around naming it or excusing it. And I find that a little problematic.
And this gets back into the preference thing, right? Is it's a sort, you're talking about a kind of unexamined stereotype or an unexamined assumption, which also kind of reduces you to your boobs and your curly hair.
Right.
But for you, I want to know how that plays out as someone who is routinely showing their boobs and their beautiful curly hair to people. Right? Because you're also, you know, you are most known for burlesque and stripping. And so how does that play out for you? If people have already sort of seen you on stage and thought, oh, this is what I know her for. It's her boobs. And I love those boobs.
I mean, I love those boobs too. Like I think of it, and I do, and I strip about my Judaism. Like I have numerous acts that are about Jewishness. Mm. And for me, the difference is between objectification and subjectification. And that when I'm stripping, I'm telling stories from my perspective, and I have agency over how my body is used. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a tool for storytelling as well as for inspiring, you know, debate, desire, whatever the thing is. But when somebody sort of superimposes a story about me onto my body, that's when I start feeling a little bit more alarm.
Mm. Okay, this is the sort of projection part that you talk about.
Yes.
Which is they're telling themselves a story, but I'm actually right here in front of them and I could tell my own story.
Exactly. And it's a good story.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. I identify with that a lot. That's what I talked about, my pet peeve of people telling me what my story is. It's like, really want to punch them. Don't advocate violence. Sorry. But okay, so it's like this, it's a sort of a writing over or talking over your voice and your sense of subjectivity.
Right, right. And in one of the examples, so it's not like, it doesn't feel like a compliment to me at all. It's not like, oh, well, I'm smart. It's that I'm a Jewish person, therefore I am smart, which feels really different. I also know a lot of Jews who are dumbasses, which...
Of course, it's just like every stereotype, right?
Yeah, we need, you know, and thanks for fighting the good fight to all the dumb Jews out there. But yeah, it's exactly that. It's a projection. And so it feels like I don't even need to actually be here to be participating, because you could just have an idea of what you think I am and roll with that. And you don't actually need the inconvenience of my entire humanity.
Right. And all of your... sort of all of your dimensions.
Right.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
So how does this jive with like your feelings about your Jewish partners? Like, has it come up in play?
Yes, it's come up in play. So first of all, I wrote this poem. People probably don't even know that I write poetry. I wrote this poem a while ago. I put it in a chapbook and it was called Your Nose Is My God and I Worship It.
Mm.
About one of my Jewish lovers' noses. And I couldn't find this poem anywhere. I super would have shared it with all of you, but like I was digging through archives and, you know, it was like very, very, very long ago. And so, yeah, so I mean, I feel like part of it is like unarticulated for me, that how do I end up with Jewish people? Because it's not, it's like it transcends gender and class and I would even say intelligence. So there's not like a one, you know what I mean? It like transcends some of these other things. And like some of them are introverts and some of them are extroverts. And so I don't, It just, it's like, I meet someone, I totally get into them, and then I find out that they're Jewish.
Mm. Oh, that's so interesting.
Right? Like, I'm not, like, meeting them at shul and know that they're Jewish necessarily, like, up front.
Right, yeah.
Right? Because I'm not really, just to be fair, I'm not going to shul unless I'm invited. Yeah, does that make sense? So I feel like it's unarticulated in some way.
Oh, that's so rich. I mean, it's rich, right? There's something really powerful there.
Yes, but it's like a thing I also have with Canadians. When I first went to Mexico, this is such a random thing, but when I first went to Mexico, I found all these couples attractive. I hooked up with them, and then I found out later they're all Canadian. And it was a little bit like, Tristan, what's that about? Right? I mean, I love Canadians and universal health care and no guns. And there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to like about Canadians. But yeah, I just, so part of it is just like an energy and an attraction. But I wouldn't say all those Canadians looked alike or were alike in any stretch of the imagination.
Was that after the election?
Was that after the election? It was before the election, actually.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, because you said you look for the people who don't look exhausted and terrified.
Oh, that's a good point. Right. The people who have like the least amount of like anxiety vibration.
Right.
Because right now, just in America, for people who aren't here, people are vibrating at a certain anxiety level all the time. The people I know, the people in my world, the people I see, even like therapists seem more anxious. Mm-hmm. I've had that experience. Okay. I want to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about hate, hate sex, hate speech, hate actions. So stay with us. You don't want to miss this last segment. Hey everyone, it's Kinktober. As the days get shorter and the nights get longer, our friends at the Pleasure Chest will be turning a kinky corner and diving deeper into cosplay, bondage, and a bit more BDSM. They'll be featuring some of their favorite kink folks and products on their site and social media all month long. From pup hoods and pony plugs to sexy costumes and size-inclusive lingerie, the Pleasure Chest has everything you need to kick up your kink or cosplay. Check out their selection of Halloween costumes and accessories before shopping anywhere else. All stores will have candy out and hidden boupons around the store with delicious discounts from October 30th to the 31st. You can also visit pleasurechest.com to see the schedule of their free weekly workshops and save 20% off their most popular kink, cosplay, and BDSM gear from October 25th to the 31st, online only. While you're there, if you make a purchase, use coupon code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm getting a little heady and fangirly because Fancy Feast is on my show and we're talking about her latest article on being a fetish. Fancy, you say in the piece, as with most stereotypes, fetishizing is ultimately an expression of animus. Now, this article comes out at a time when anti-Semitism is at one of its all-time highs in the United States and around the world. It's verbal, it's harassment, it's actual violence done against Jewish folks, against people perceived to be Jewish, against Jewish places of worship. It's not a fun place out there for Jews. And so that begs the question, is this the fetishizing and the sort of anti-Semitism, is it two sides of the same coin?
Ooh. I think that's certainly possible. I think there's a kind of way that we take our fears and anxieties and kind of cram them into sex.
Mm.
And I think that there is either it's like hostility that can't actually be expressed in a way that's socially sanctioned, or whether that's like just fear of inadequacy or rage about what's happening in the world at large that just finds its way getting funneled through that. It's a very complicated place to play.
Yeah. And I mean, and it sort of can't be ignored that, first of all, everyone doesn't write about this every day. And then your piece comes out in this particular context.
Oh, I mean, yeah. What a terrifying time. And what this moment, this current moment has done for my sex drive is like just completely tank it.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways I'm like, great, I don't have to worry about this kind of stuff because I just want to be, you know, alone with my cat.
And your vibrator. I was projecting. Sorry.
Because I don't find there to be a lot of erotics in the current moment. I think about this time that we're living in as being pretty full of like fear and uncertainty, which is not always fun to have in sex. So one is right now like taking precedent over the other, but it's really interesting. Jewishness has not been seen as like a threatened minority in the same way in the United States, particularly on the East Coast. I'm in New York. It hasn't been perceived that way for several decades, and the conversation has really shifted recently, and seeing how people deal with that or don't deal with that has been really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this is a question that comes up in social justice spaces that I've experienced many times, which is that at some point Jews were forced to assimilate and became part of the sort of construction of white identity.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of Jews out there who still consider themselves marginalized and othered and not white.
Right, and there are a lot of Jews who are not white and are not.
Yes, also, yes.
And there are a lot of Jews who feel as though they don't benefit from white privilege, but totally do, even if that's not how they identify.
Mm.
And so it's pretty thorny. There's a lot of different, I was going to say shades of gray, but that's such a, why do I even say that phrase anymore? So that there is this really unusual place that particularly like white passing American Jews occupy, a place where we are oppressors in some ways and in some ways that are current and also historically oppressed and currently oppressed. So yeah, holding all of that together is a lot.
And currently under attack. I mean, I think it's anti-Semitism has come back with a vengeance, not surprising, because so has all forms of white supremacy, right? So it's woven in there. Can't be teased out of that. But yeah, it seems to me that people are, when people have this sort of fear and anxiety, they fall back on tropes and stereotypes. So if we're talking about playing with tropes and stereotypes in a sexual context, is there a way right now for folks to identify as Jewish to do that And you're saying for you, no.
For me right now, no. But I'm finding it in my performance work and performing Jewishness and Jewish sexuality in a sort of not one-sided way, but in a way that feels very bracketed. Like I'm on the stage, no one else is on the stage. I got the lights on me, they're in the audience. For now, that feels like the safe way for me personally to do it. But that's not the only way. So I would be very interested to hear from other Jewish people about how they're negotiating their identity and their sexuality in this moment.
Yeah, I wanna put a call to action for my listeners, people. Do you want to call me and tell me, for those of you who out there who identify as Jewish, what has your sexual play been like? Have you ever sexualized or played with a dynamic that had to do with you being Jewish or someone else being Jewish? Call our 24-hour voicemail line, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I also want to say about last week's show that I put a call out in that show for survivors of sexual violence, harassment, abuse, and coercion to articulate for them what justice would look like. If you could have your way and you could script justice, what would that look like? We've already gotten a number of calls about that have been really powerful, and I want to wrap those all together in a future show. So I'm asking you for two questions. And these guys are softballs, right? This is like just something to think about when you're just surfing through Netflix. No, it's not. But what does survivor justice look like? And how are you as a Jewish person in a time of great, mostly American Jewish person in a time of great anti-Semitism, negotiating your Jewish identity in the world and in the bedroom? It's a great question, Bansi.
I'm also wondering what kind of coalition building there can be with people who have existed in oppressed identities in our country for a long, long time, and what kind of conversations can happen around that. If there's similarity, if there's, you know, what the historical differences do to the nuances in the way that we are sexualized or that we experience our sexuality. Mm-hmm. I'm so curious about this topic.
No, I could totally see this sort of cross-cultural conversation happening about the various sort of, tropes, like you said before, right? The various kind of tropes, and then how that plays into people's like personal one-on-one interactions with their own sexuality and with partners.
Yes.
Okay, so let's have that show.
Yeah, I'm down.
Okay. Okay, so now there's a third thing now, guys. Let me give you the phone number again. My gosh, we're doing a lot of work today. 323-SEX-8266. 323-SEX-8266. Tell me who you want to be in a roundtable discussion about these very issues. I think this would be fascinating about race, ethnicity, and culture in, you know, under the regime of Trump. What's it like to negotiate sex, to experience or attempt to access pleasure in this moment in history? Mm. Okay, let's tell people how they can find you, okay? Okay. You're at fancyfeastburlesque.com, but you're also all over the social media. Tell me those handles.
Yeah, so I'm at fancyfeastburlesque on Instagram. That's all one word. And I'm at Fancy Burly Q, that's B-U-R-L-Y-Q, on Twitter.
And of course, there's really nice pictures that you can look at while not objectifying her.
You can go for it.
Okay. And you're also on Facebook, Fancy Feast Burlesque on Facebook.
That's correct. But I'm trying to get away from Facebook because it's a hell site.
Aren't we all, honey? Aren't we all? Facebook released its new terms of service. I'm going to post about this weekend on my social media, and they are cracking down even more around images, around sexuality. It's going to hurt a lot of sex educators. So look for that on my social media this weekend. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's really such a pleasure.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Remember, we are celebrating 350 episodes, 350 episodes. And nearly every single person on this team has been here since day one. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing set. A-Rod, my engineer, not here from the beginning, but still a really important part of the team. I love you, A-Rod. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. My guest is going to be Sarah Biano. She's a therapist in Chicago and the host of the podcast, Conversations with a Wounded Healer. God, that should be enough to get you there, right? So provocative. Okay. Until then, you can catch me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. The show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.